Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 10th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes or so, to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for this hump day edition of the show. Two guests will join me. The first, Brian Leonard, professional handicapper from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat NFL and college football with him, with a focus on the MAC as usual. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, will join me. We'll chat about betting team totals as an extension of the derivatives betting process. Then also take a look at the NFL with a couple of games with him. Then finally, the CIMB Classic, this week's PGA Tour event out in Malaysia. I do have to start today's show by, I guess, maybe patting myself on the back, celebrating a bit of an achievement for us here with Bang the Book Radio. This is our 1,000th published episode. We started Bang the Book Radio's daily shows on November 16th, 2015. We had college football and NFL once a week podcasts. Then we started to expand our radio reach a little bit. Then we had the Bettors Box, also betting the buckets. So this is overall our 1,000th episode on our Bang the Book Radio channel. So many people to thank, ranging from all of my guests to all of my listeners to everybody that's been involved with this process, and of course, to Ryan for greenlighting this process for me here at bangthebook.com. It's been a whole lot of fun. I hope we've helped you along the way. We've never really strayed from what we wanted to be on this show. We wanted to make you a better handicapper. This was never going to be a show about just giving out picks, just giving out, things to tell you what to do. That's never what I wanted with this show, and I'm very, very happy that we've been able to stick to that. We've had a lot of great insights, analysis, predictions, everything like that along the way here on the program, and hopefully we've been a big help to you in terms of growing as a bettor and growing as a handicapper. So again, our 1,000th published episode here of Bang the Book Radio content today, and I'm certainly thankful to everybody that's been a part of it. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Check out everything that we have to offer over there, alongside with this Bang the Book Radio that we've been growing and cultivating over the last several years. The content at bangthebook.com has never been better. Parker Michaels' NHL picks on a daily basis. I put up my preview for the Dodgers versus Brewers NLCS. We've got college football power ratings posted, college football situational angles. We'll have NFL power ratings from Danny Vorgs probably tonight or early tomorrow. Golf, NASCAR, preseason NBA stuff, continued MLB, lots and lots of college football and NFL as well. Tons of things for you to check out over there at the website. Please make sure that you do that, as well as our free pick contests, our sportsbook reviews. You know that this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by our friends over at BSI Sportsbook. If you use that Bang 100 promo code, you'll get a 100% deposit bonus to get that account started at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Past editions of the show, including individual segments, also over there at bangthebook.com. So much great stuff. Very proud of everything that we've accomplished and continue to accomplish as we go forward here. We got two guests on the program here today. The first one, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
It's going great. I'm excited, and congratulations on the 1,000th episode. That's really impressive to have a show that's continued on as long as this one has. And I know it's a ton of work for you, but being a fan of the show when I'm not even on, I just love the show. And you ask the correct questions. And there's many other shows that I've done in the last 35 years where the host didn't really have a clue about sports gambling, didn't know what to ask. You asked the right questions. This is a gold mine for those who are starting out in this industry, trying to learn. They're learning from the best, and it's just an honor to be here for the 1,000th episode.
Well, like I was telling you before the show, Brian, I mean, it's really great to have you on the 1,000th episode, because I've told this story before, and, I had very humble beginnings as a handicapper. I don't have any great stories, just me betting, three-line $5 parlays in my dorm room in college, and that was how I kind of got my feet wet in the business. And then I heard you on Chad Millman's podcast. I think it was probably about 2009, 2010, something like that, and, I'm listening, and I'm like, this guy is talking a lot about the Cleveland Browns, and you know, I'm not really sure why. So I did a little bit of research to find out more about you, found out that you were a Cleveland guy as well, reached out, and you've been nothing but, you know, respectful and gracious towards me. Even when I was somebody new in the industry, and then it continues here today, there's a lot of respect between you and I. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of things that I've done over the last few years to sort of carve out my place in this industry. And you've had your place in this industry for a very long time. But, you know, when I was just a kid that didn't know anything about this kind of stuff, you were there to sort of help me along with the process and get me, you know, into the professional world of betting and handicapping. And I can't thank you enough for that, Brian. You've been a big influence on me throughout my career. And, you know, it's great to have you on my program and certainly here for the 1,000th episode.
Well, I appreciate that. When I was starting out, Mark Lawrence was my mentor, basically, even though I knew Phil Steele a whole lot better than I did Mark. But Mark would go out of his way. I just thought that was amazing. A guy with the name of Mark Lawrence going out of his way and talking to me when I go to place ads. He says, "Do you want to be affiliated with these kind of people that are in that magazine?" I says, "You know what? No, I don't." And it's a payback thing. And I knew from our first conversation that you had a passion for this. And I thought that this could be a career for you. And I've met a lot of people, a lot of young people over the years that have been the same way. And I've tried to go out of my way to help them out. And a lot of them just get frustrated, you know, because it is a frustrating industry. Anytime you're expected to win, you know, everybody that's out there expects everybody to win 60% every year. And obviously that just doesn't happen. So you go into winning streaks and losing streaks, and to be able to stick through it for as long as you have just tells you the character you have and what you're trying to bring to all the people who listen to the show.
And again, I mean, it obviously doesn't stop here with the 1,000th episode, but the thing that I will tell my listeners and the thing that, you know, I know that you believe this as well, no matter how long you're in this business, no matter how long you're in this industry, and really any line of work, any industry that you're in, you never want to stop learning. There's always something that you don't know. There's always something that you need to improve upon. And even for me here, you know, I certainly believe that to be the case. I'm always looking for different things, different angles, you know, building up that network. It's all very, very important. So for listeners that are out there, and I know that I've had a lot of people, you know, that have reached out to me, that have asked me for, you know, maybe a little bit of mentorship or some personal advice on how to break into the industry, some of the things to do to get to, you know, a certain level. I mean, never stop learning, never stop trying as hard as you can to be as good as you can at this business, because yes, it's frustrating, but it can also be very rewarding. And, you know, it's one of those things too, where a lot of the people that I've surrounded myself with in my life at this point in time are people that I've met through message boards in this business, through doing the show, professional handicappers, people out there in Vegas, just, you know, friends of mine. It's one big handicapping family. I know that sounds cliche and kind of stupid, but it really truly is. And, you know, when you surround yourself with the right people in this business, you are set up for success. And fortunately, I've been able to do that and have some measure of success. And you know, like I said, I mean, this certainly is just scratching the surface, just the beginning of what I'd like to accomplish here in this industry. All right, Brian, let's chat a little bit here about week 6 of the NFL season. We've got the week starting up tomorrow night with Philadelphia against the Giants. We've got another division game here on Thursday Night Football, which really used to be the case week in and week out. Now the NFL trying to get some more marquee matchups there in that primetime time slot. But this one's about as standard of a Thursday night handicap as we could expect. NFC East rivals, Eagles, the better team, the 3-point favorite on the road in the Meadowlands.
Yeah, it's the first, I believe it's the first divisional matchup that we've had. And as we've spoken about this in the past, these Thursday games are really a crapshoot because you just don't have the ability to put in a lot of plays in that short time frame. So when you're playing a non-divisional rival, the home team has a huge advantage. And I don't believe the home team has lost against the spread so far this season. So when you're having the home team with basically a half a day more preparation, because obviously the road team has to fly in, it's a big advantage, and it's paid off well for us. Now, this one, you see a divisional game where teams play each other twice a year. So because of that, you don't need as much preparation. So these teams know each other very well. So the home field advantage is lessened because of that. And that's something you always want to keep an eye on, is how much these two teams know about each other. And if it's on a short week, like I said before, that's just a tremendous advantage for the home team. But we don't say that this week, as we see the Eagles traveling to the Giants, a hated rivalry. And really, you could say both these teams have been disappointing all season long. I wasn't high on the Giants coming in. I've never been a fan of Eli Manning. I keep being told that he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. I just happen to think he's been on teams that have been very good in the past. I don't think he had much to do with it, but whatever, it's just the way it's going to be. But Philadelphia came into the season, and even in the preseason, you look like they were taking it for granted that they had won the championship, and they thought they'd be able to turn it on once the season started, but they haven't really done so. And you go back and look at some of the games they played. They opened that game with Atlanta. They scored 18 points against Atlanta. And now you look at, if a team scores 18 points against Atlanta, what the hell has that team done? Because they haven't done anything defensively all season long. And you look at that offensively for the Eagles. Now, granted, they've had two different quarterbacks and the one coming back from a major surgery. But 18, 21, 20, 23, 21, they've been consistent, but they haven't been consistently good. And when you look at the teams that they have played, they've all been disappointing. Atlanta hasn't been nearly as good as we thought they were going to be. Minnesota hasn't been nearly as good. Tennessee, Indianapolis, Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is probably the biggest surprise out of them all, and Tampa Bay changed quarterbacks after the first 3.5 games. So Philadelphia hasn't played anybody, and they haven't looked good doing it. Jacksonville, the Giants did play Jacksonville opening day at home. I lose that game by 5. Carolina is a pretty good team. They lost that game by 2 last week. New Orleans, obviously a good team. They lose by 15. Dallas and Houston, 2 disappointments, and they lose to Dallas by 7, and they beat Houston by 5. But to be totally honest with you, I don't know if I could trust either one of these teams. I made the line in this game, Philadelphia 1.3, so it's a slight edge to the Giants, but I don't trust the Giants in a win situation. They turned the ball over way too much. They've lost a turnover battle in 4 of those 5 games. Just because the game is on Thursday and it's on national TV doesn't mean we need to play it. There's much better games on the board coming up.
Well, and this is one of those cases, too, where I would want to back the Giants. As you mentioned, home divisional dog on a Thursday night. We did have a situation with a divisional game in week 2. That was Cincinnati and Baltimore. The Bengals did come away with that win at home. And as you mentioned, home teams have been very, very good here on Thursday night so far. This would be a play-on spot for the Giants because you've got Carson Wentz coming off of the ACL, short week after playing Minnesota, Jay Ajayi out with the torn ACL. The Eagles have had running back injuries all season long. Darren Sproles hasn't been healthy. Corey Clement hasn't been healthy. Now Ajayi's done for the year. Philadelphia has a bunch of offensive line issues as well. Lane Johnson limited in practice yesterday. Jason Peters hasn't played very well in the offensive line either. Everything points towards taking the Giants in this spot, but that's the thing. The Giants are not a trustworthy team at all. Did play well against Carolina last week. Maybe Carolina a little bit sluggish coming off of the bye. But you know, like you said, I mean, and this is something that I think is part of that learning curve that I sort of mentioned earlier on in the show here, because you've got a standalone Thursday night game. Just because the college football card only has a couple of games, one of them injury filled with Texas Tech and TCU, the other one in the Sun Belt, so you don't know a whole lot about those teams as a general rule. Just because it's a Thursday night game, just because there's no baseball playoffs, doesn't mean you have to play this game. So while I think the Giants make more sense from a situational handicap, especially with Philadelphia's injury problems, I can't trust this team. I just can't do it.
Now, when you're taking an underdog, and they're not a big underdog, but you'd want the team to have some explosive ability. They have not won the explosive play battle in any game so far this year. They were even with Carolina last week. And speaking of last week, and I always take a look at explosive plays. Last week was the least amount of explosive plays I've seen in an NFL weekend that I could remember. You've got a lot of games that went under, and a lot of it was because teams just didn't get the big play. There was a lot of – they were pretty good at getting the first downs, a lot of successful plays, but nobody was able to get that big breakout play. And you're seeing games where you had two explosive offenses expecting the game to go over, and each team would have two explosive plays in those games. So it's interesting how it all turned out, but if you bet a lot of unders last week and had success, I don't know how long that's going to continue. I think it was a one-week situation with the explosive plays, but it's something to keep track of. And when you want to bet a dog, you want to make sure that they have that ability to get that one or two big plays a game that the opposition can't stop, and that keeps you in the game as an underdog, and the Giants just don't have that this season.
Right, and one of the things, too, about taking underdogs, particularly short ones here, is you have to see a path for them to win the game because they're only a three-point dog. So you really have to look at this game and say, okay, the Giants can win this game if X, Y, and Z happens. I don't even know if you get to X, let alone Y and Z. So it does make the Giants a very, very difficult team to back here this week. Again, if I had to play this game, and I don't, it would be the Giants. But, you know, still one of those situations where you're probably better off just kind of leaving this game alone. So with that, we'll look ahead to Sunday afternoon here, 1 o'clock Eastern kickoff at Paul Brown Stadium, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. As we know, these two teams don't really like each other a whole hell of a lot. Last year, we had some extracurriculars with Juju Smith-Schuster and Vontaze Perfect. We always seem to have a lot of different things going on when these AFC North rivals meet, particularly Pittsburgh and Cincinnati now at this point in time. Cincinnati, a 2.5-point favorite here. As I'm talking, we did see my bookie go down to 2, so maybe Pittsburgh, the preferred public side in this game for game 261, 262. What are you thinking, Brian?
Yeah, from a standing standpoint, you would think this is the game that Pittsburgh has to have. Cincinnati, I was on Cincinnati last week, and Cincinnati had been very good to me, and I was pretty lucky to win that game. Last week, successful plays, 48% for Miami, 44% for Cincinnati. Just shows that the Bengals were probably lucky in that game. They did win the turnover battle by 2, and I think that's what won the game for them. But they were getting completely outplayed at half and were able to come back in that game. This is a game right here between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. I've got Pittsburgh as a one-point favorite. I lean with Pittsburgh. I would like to have had the 3, but I think a lot of people feel that way, which is why the line's down to 2.5. But Cincinnati's outplayed Pittsburgh on the season. Problem is, how much of that is something that we can back the rest of the year? When I take a look at successful plays, offensively, 51.2% on the season for Cincy, but the defense is 51.0. So as good as the offense has been, the defense has been giving it up just as well. Pittsburgh's defense has actually looked pretty good as of late. They had that game where they gave up the 42 to Kansas City, but defensively the last few weeks they've done very well. Last week against Atlanta, only 33% of Atlanta's offensive plays were successful. This is a team in Pittsburgh that was a -5 in turnovers in an opener against Cleveland, and they still managed to tie the game, which tells you how much they outplayed Cleveland in that game. But you know, from a turnover standpoint, I think the advantage goes to Pittsburgh slightly. I would expect for it to either be even or +1 in turnovers. The defense from Pittsburgh is the best unit on the field. Like Pittsburgh, don't quite like the line. If it was 3, I'd be on Pittsburgh. 2.5, I'm probably going to be passing this contest.
There's a lot going on here with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, drama queen Ben Roethlisberger talking about pain in his elbow, had to change his throwing mechanics last week, so on and so forth. So, you know, he's kind of setting that usual stage that he likes to set. Le'Veon Bell coming back probably during the bye week for Pittsburgh. At least that's the expectation. Mike Tomlin bitching about the officiating. And I can't blame him for that. I mean, going into Monday Night Football, this past week here, 166 roughing the passer penalties is the projection. There have already been 50 of them. Mike Tomlin voicing his concerns about that last week. And then also now we have Antonio Bryant in a little bit of legal trouble as he's been sued after apparently throwing furniture off of a balcony. So you know, the Steelers have all kinds of problems going on here right now, not to mention the fact that they're only 2-2-1 on the season. As you said, this is – you don't want to talk about a week 6 game as a must win. But if you fall to 2-3-1, while Cincinnati improves to 5-1, and we'll see what the Ravens do. They're taking on money this week against the Titans. They could improve to 4-2. Pittsburgh's really in a little bit of trouble here. If they do drop this game, head into the bye week at 2-3-1. Now, they do play the Browns in something of a revenge spot after tying them coming up here in week 8. So maybe that's a get-right game for them. But, you know, for Pittsburgh right now, there's really not a whole lot of positive feelings. I mean, yeah, they blew out the Falcons last week, but that says more about where Atlanta's defense is with all the injuries than it does about Pittsburgh. So I think this is a tough spot. I mean, is this a changing of the guard kind of game in the AFC North where, you know, we see Cincinnati with some expectations take care of business here, and we see Cincinnati and Baltimore run this division the rest of the way? I don't know, you know, because Pittsburgh has that reputation of stepping up in games like this. As much as we all, you know, have thoughts and feelings about Ben Roethlisberger, he tends to win these kinds of games. So I think that's a really tough narrative to try and get your head past, is that Cincinnati is the better team, I think, but Pittsburgh traditionally does put it together in roles like this.
It reminds me of the New England Patriots, whereas in earlier in the season, people are saying, is this the end of the New England Patriots, which I believe they have said for the last decade. New England always seems to get off to slow starts to start the season. But, yeah, you're right. Pittsburgh is acting like the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that in the past has had a lot of personnel issues where guys have done things that they shouldn't have been doing off the field. And now Pittsburgh seems to have taken over that. And to make this matter even more important for Pittsburgh is the only loss for Cincinnati was when they went on the road to Carolina, an NFC game. So if you get looking at tiebreakers, not only the division, but the AFC, Cincinnati's undefeated in the AFC so far this year. So from a must-win standpoint, you've got to think that this is the game the Steelers have to put out. But are the Steelers what we thought they were? And we will have to see, because the Steelers the last few years, as you pointed out with Ben and some of the other things going on, is the talent is there, but the coaching hasn't been very good, and the off-the-field issues have been a problem at Pittsburgh. Can they win with just talent alone? I guess we'll see this weekend.
Well, and this is one of those games, too, and this is very important to do from an NFL standpoint, and I talk about this all the time here on the show, but this is a game that has probably every reason of being on three. Cincinnati has been the better team in the regular season. They found a way to win last week and cover the number against the Dolphins. The Steelers have all these problems. You know, they've had some defensive injuries early on in the season. There's been some question as to, you know, how much of a handle Mike Tomlin still has on this team. This is a number that if you look at everything that's gone on during the 2018 NFL season, Cincinnati should be 3, and they're not. And that's one of those context clues in the marketplace that you do want to look for out there, is that, you know, Cincinnati is probably by rights a field goal favorite here. If you look at Cincinnati's home field advantage, maybe somewhere in the 2 range. So possibly they're a half point favorite on a neutral. If we're kind of looking at it from a power rating standpoint, maybe this game's a pick 'em on a neutral. These two teams do not look like a pick 'em on a neutral. The body of work is not equal for these two teams. And yet that's where this line is.
It's interesting that last year, the final meeting between the two, Cincinnati wins that game 13-10, but they lost 5 straight to the Pittsburgh Steelers before that. So actually, you're finding Pittsburgh in a revenge situation that they haven't been in against Cincinnati since 2009. Or excuse me, I was looking at the wrong schedule. Never mind. But this is a team in Cincinnati that has not had a good history against Pittsburgh. But yeah, we'll see what happens this week.
Yeah, what happens this week. It should be a very interesting game, to say the least. And, of course, I believe, I could be wrong, but I think that Monday night game on December 4th is the game where Ryan Shazier was hurt. So for Pittsburgh, you know, they won that game 23-20, but it was obviously a very, very scary. It was the scariest NFL injury I think I've ever seen with the way that Shazier went down in that game. So, you know, for Pittsburgh here, you know, I mean, we'll see. Maybe they've got a little bit of a rally for Ryan type of mindset here in this one. All right, we'll transition over to the college football side of things. And as usual, with a MAC expert on the line, we'll make sure that we talk some Mid-American Conference football here on today's show. And Brian, let's start near the top of the board for Saturday game, 119-120. Toledo takes on Eastern Michigan. when you think about where these two teams have been in the 20-teens, there's no way you could ever imagine a game where Toledo and Eastern Michigan is lined as a pick 'em, but yet here we are.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to clear something up. Pittsburgh has won the last five meetings against Cincinnati. Yeah, it's a situation with Toledo where this was a team, and I talked early in the season that I thought Northern Illinois was the best team coming into the season. Ohio was expected to be the best team coming out of the other division. Northern's starting to play better during league action, but this Toledo team was expected to be good, just like they are all the time. And they just have not played well. Even when they played a weaker opposition, Bowling Green last week, they went 52-36. I don't cover the spread. One of the things I like to take a look at is how the line play is. And even in last week's game, Toledo didn't have a sack against Bowling Green. On the season, they've allowed 12 sacks and only have 2 sacks themselves. Now, granted, Miami, Florida is a very good team. Fresno State's a very good team. Nevada's decent, but they really have not played well at all. And Eastern Michigan is another one of those teams that just cannot win the sack battle, losing 3-0 last week to Western Michigan. 19 allowed, 5-4 Eastern Michigan on the season. And these are two teams right now. We talked about last week about the terrible situation Eastern Michigan was in when they would travel for the fourth time in 5 weeks. I had to go to Western Michigan, and one of those was all the way out to San Diego State. And they continue to cover the spread. The closing line was 4.5. I know a lot of people were up on Western Michigan because of the scheduling situation. But Eastern Michigan is one of those teams you hate to go against because even in bad situations, this team comes to play. And they've covered 3 out of 5 this year. This is a team that doesn't have a tremendous talent offensively. They're only getting 37.1% of their offensive plays are successful on the season. So this is a team that needs to win with defense. They've got maybe a league-wide, or excuse me, a country-wide middle-of-the-pack defense. But they're playing a Toledo team that I don't think I've ever been able to say this after four games. Toledo's actually below average offensively when you take a look at what they've done, successful play rate offensively, 41.6. Now, granted, they have played Fresno and Miami, two very good defenses, but Nevada's defense isn't very good. And Bowling Green could be the worst defense in college football. And Toledo just can't move the football. And it's a major concern in this game is I think Eastern Michigan, you know what you're going to get out of them. I made the line 1.5 here for Eastern Michigan. So it's not showing, you know, a tremendous amount of value. But still, Eastern Michigan is a team right now that I trust, whereas I just can't trust Toledo. That offense has not done anything all season long.
Well, and I'll give a shout-out to Matt Lindemann here, who I started doing a college football podcast with way back when for a website and a message board called Beyond the Bets, and now Matt on the odds team at Caesars Palace, and he's doing a fantastic job with that. If you don't follow at Lindetrain on Twitter, make sure that you do. But tweeted this out yesterday. After having 9 games decided by a touchdown or less and 6 decided by a field goal or less last year, all 5 of Eastern Michigan's games versus FBS competition this year have been decided by a touchdown or less. And the thing for Eastern Michigan is that when they play these close games, for the most part, they don't win them. They didn't do it last year. They beat Purdue by a point on the road this year. That was whatever hurricane was still kind of spinning around there throughout the Midwest. That was a game where we had very, very awful weather, really surprising loss for Purdue. But since then, field goal loss to San Diego State, field goal loss to Northern Illinois, field goal loss to Western Michigan. It's anecdotal, but Eastern Michigan has to prove to me that they can win a close game. I think they're the right side in this one. I've got this game lined to pick them. I don't think Toledo is nearly as good as they have been in the past, and I don't really like Toledo's quarterback situation with the injuries, and I also think that the guy who was the starter, Guagdani or whatever his name is, I don't think he threw a very good football anyway. So I think Eastern Michigan is in a good spot here on the gray turf, but they haven't won a lot of these coin flip, close, one possession games. And based on the line that we're seeing for this one, that's what we should get in this game. So I have a hard time trusting Eastern Michigan this week.
Well, the one thing I take out of that And Matt's doing a new podcast with Cheetah right now that's very good. But take a look at Eastern Michigan. Sure, they don't win the close games, but they're not favored in the close games. In five games against FPS this year, the only team they were favored against was Northern Illinois, and they lose that one in triple overtime. Every other game, they were the dog. And that's the situation we've had, you know, the last couple of years is Eastern Michigan is the dog. So even though they are close games and they're not winning them, they're actually not supposed to be winning them. It's not like they're being installed as a favorite and it's a close game and they can't win them. When it comes down to winning games at the end in these close games, to me, it's a coin flip for the most part. A lot of people pay a lot of attention to them not being able to win. And if it's a young team, like in the NBA, you see a lot of this happen where a young team just cannot find a way to win at the end. It's because the better team, which is the team they're playing, has been around a lot longer, and they know how to win the games at the end. In college, when you're only there 4 years, if you're a player that makes the team as a freshman, I don't think it's the same. So even though it does have a little bit of validity, I don't trust it completely because of that.
Speaking of teams that can't really win close games, the Miami Redhawks are one of them, and they played Akron last week. We're going to talk about game 139-140, Akron and Buffalo. Then we'll talk about Miami's game for this week. But Miami just decided, you know what, we can't win close games, so we'll just go ahead and blow out the Zips. They win that game 41-17 in the Rubber City. Akron with five turnovers in that game. Not really a big surprise to see this week's line against Buffalo going from 9-11 with Akron off of such a horrific showing. But at the same time, Akron -3 in turnovers last week, turned the ball over five times. Is this line an overreaction, Brian?
I think it is. I bet the 11 with Akron. This is one of the few MAC games that I've bet so far this year. Yeah, Akron loses that turnover battle by three. The offense for Akron has been lousy all year. They're averaging 31.5% successful plays, but they're only allowing 39.9, which is lower than the national average. But Akron's had a problem with sacks. And last week they gave up seven sacks to Miami. When they played Iowa State, they gave up four. That's a concern, but especially when you got a Buffalo team that's up 13-3 with sacks. So the line of scrimmage should be controlled by Buffalo, and you would expect that as Buffalo is a double-digit favorite here. But this Akron team, you know, they beat Northwestern, and obviously turnovers played a major difference in that game. They were +2. Iowa State, you know, they get that easy cover against Iowa State. They were +1 in that one. But last week, turning ball over like they did, Akron's not a team that can win by turning the ball over as much as they did last week against Miami. Even though Buffalo is the better team, and I like this Buffalo team, the Buffalo offense is less than league average or less than the national average. So you've got two teams that should be playing in a low-scoring game, and you've got a +11 in this contest. I took Akron. I just thought that the line should have been lower. I believe I made it 7.5. So anytime I can get a three-point advantage, I'm going to play it. And, you know, Buffalo is one of those teams that everybody likes to play. But keep in mind, last week, +3 turnovers against Central Michigan, and they still only won by 10. So this is a team that got a lot of hype early in the season. They beat Temple, who's a pretty good team, but they were a +2 turnover advantage. And then you take a look at the other teams they played, and they've all been – Eastern's been what we thought they were. Rutgers is terrible. Army is a good football team. They get crushed in that game. They won the turnover battle and lost by 29 in the game. That tells you how much Army really took it to Buffalo in that game. So Buffalo, a little bit more hype than they deserve. Akron, nobody's talking about them. I took the Zips here +11.
My number's right on 11, so you and I have a little bit of a difference of opinion here. Presumably with how both teams are rated, I think we probably have a couple-point difference on both of these teams. And Buffalo was a team that got a lot of hype coming into the season, has also gotten a lot of hype in the betting market. They've been steamed quite a bit here. So I'll be curious to see where this number winds up landing, if it sits 11, if it goes up a little bit more. Again, I'm right on the number, so I don't think I'll have a play in this one, but a good breakdown from you there on that game. Let's go to game 145-146 here, Kent State and Miami of Ohio. And I mentioned that Miami of Ohio has had a lot of problems winning close games here in the Chuck Martin era. So they just went ahead and won in lopsided fashion last week. And they're favored to win by double digits here this week. But this number has gone down a little bit from 12.5 to as low as 10.5 out there, predominantly 11 in the marketplace. Kent State is better than people expected for sure under first-year head coach Sean Lewis. And a big effort last week from the Golden Flats against Ohio. The question is, does that game say more about Kent State or more about Ohio?
I think it says more about Ohio, although I will say that this Kent State team has the makings of a quality team in the future. They haven't gotten there this year. The defense has been the major factor. Offensively, they played pretty well. But take a look at the schedule that Kent State has played. They go to Illinois. Granted, it's Illinois, but it is a Big Ten school. They go to Penn State. They go to Mississippi, and then they go to Ball State. They played four road games out of the first five games, the only home game against Howard, and they crushed Howard, same team that beat UNLV last year, I believe, at home. And then the game against Ohio. So they're primed for playing some tougher opponents, and now they get to play in the MAC, and I think there's some value to play on Kent State here. I made the line 9, so it's not quite what I want to play here, but there's something I wanted to touch back on the last game we talked about. Or is Buffalo's playing six? This is their sixth straight game. Or is the opposition had a bye week 2 weeks ago? So that actually helps the team that has the bye because the other team's a little bit worn out. Another reason that I like Akron in that one. But yeah, Miami's one of those teams that you take a look at their stats offensively, not been very good. Defensively, they have been pretty good. 41.8% success rate that they've allowed, only getting 37.9. So the offense hasn't been there all season long. Although you take a look at the last 3 weeks, they played Bowling Green, scored 38, Western Michigan 40, Western Michigan 39, then Akron 41. But in those three games, there are plus 6 turnovers. So I'm not a believer in Miami's offense has all of a sudden figured it out after scoring 3-0 the previous 2 weeks. So Miami was very fortunate with the turnovers. And Kent State's a team that they're young and, you know, they're down to turnover on the season, but I could see Miami winning this turnover battle by one playing at home, but not the 2 or 3 that they got the last couple of weeks against Western Michigan and Akron. I expect Miami to win this game, but it's not going to be easy. And we've got a Kent State team that I think is a little bit underrated, a Miami team that I think at least offensively is overrated. But Miami does play very well on the lines, so they're going to have the advantage on the lines against Kent here. So, like I said, I expect Miami to win the turnover battle by one, which would put them at less than what this line is. If they win by more than that, then they'll cover. But how many times can you go into a league game against a team that's basically on your same physicality level and you can guarantee yourself to win the turnover battle by two or more? I don't see it. I'm leaning with Kent here, but not enough to play it at this point.
This one's moved down right on to my number. My number was 11 for this game. You mentioned scheduling situations and bye weeks and, I mean, Akron didn't really use their bye week for a whole lot of good because they got blown out by Miami of Ohio afterwards. Miami of Ohio technically really doesn't have a bye this season. Their bye week is actually week 13, basically, because they go 10 days between playing Army and Buffalo. That's when Maction starts. They play Tuesday night on the road at Buffalo after playing Army. So they don't play on Saturday because they play on Tuesday. Then they play Wednesday, Tuesday. So really for Miami of Ohio here, they don't get a true bye week this season. So as we get deeper into the year with the Redhawks, you certainly want to keep that in mind, especially playing that game against the triple option team next week in the Army Knights. One more game I want to hit on in the MAC here. And, you know, this would have been a game that we would have given a lot of emphasis, a lot of enthusiasm about 2-3 years ago, maybe even last year. Game 161-162. Ohio and Northern Illinois. NIU's a 4-point favorite here in this one, but both of these teams have been disappointments so far.
I'm not sure I agree. I talked earlier about Northern Illinois playing early in the season when they play Iowa and Utah, they play Florida State. They were never in any of those games. And I talked about the possibility that they may have been sandbagging a little bit and waiting to get to conference action. Well, in conference, they beat Central Michigan 24-16. They beat Eastern Michigan 26-23 in that triple overtime game. And then Ball State, they win 24-16. So Northern Illinois' undefeated in the MAC. And really, I think that's what the goal was from Rod Carey and this team coming into the season. They were expected to play Ohio in the conference championship. Ohio is just a team who has not looked good all season long. They scored 58 points against a UMass team who's got one of the worst defenses in football. But, you know, they have not really played well. Maybe it's because they played a Cincinnati team who's better than what we thought they were going to be. Virginia, they lose that game by 14. But I haven't been an Ohio buyer. The offense has looked okay, but that defense for Ohio just is not very good. And the only good offense they really played was UMass. And they allowed, 42 points to UMass in that game, even though they won and covered that contest. But Northern Illinois, situationally wise, this is they just played three straight games on the road. This is their first game back home since that Central Michigan win when they laid 14. I think we were both on them at that point, and they only struggled to that 8-point win. So Northern Illinois is a team. They've got a bye coming up the next week, and they're one of the few teams in the MAC that actually does have a bye. You pointed out that Ohio did have their bye week two after Howard, which is a total waste of time. It's like they didn't need a bye. That's got to be the worst time to ever have a bye. But this is the second straight road game for Ohio, the fourth road game in 5 weeks. I actually have Northern Illinois as a 10-point favorite here. That's one of the games that I'm giving my clients, and I've already bet this game. I think Northern Illinois is far superior to Ohio. And when you take a look at the strength of schedule, at least my strength of schedule has got them 5.5 points better. It's going to be a lower scoring game because I just don't see Northern Illinois' offense having a great amount of success, even though the Ohio defense has been lousy. Northern hasn't put up more than 26 points, and that was in triple overtime, 24-24. So, yeah, maybe they score 30 in this game against Ohio, but Ohio's offense, decent, but not against this Northern Illinois team who's already played Iowa, Utah, Florida State. Say what you want about Florida State. Florida State has athletes, and they were still able to hold Florida State down in only allowing 42.7% successful plays. So I think Northern is at their best when they're playing in conference action because of the way they started against the opposition. A lot of people have given up on the Huskies. I haven't. I kind of saw this coming. And I've been able to make money the last couple of weeks on Northern Illinois, and I look to it once again this week.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Brian?
Wednesday is video day. We've got a lot of guys going in, a lot of guys and girls coming in to do videos today. And we've got Johnny always has us talk about the big games. And, yeah, I know when you have me on, you like to talk about the MAC because that's what I'm known for. And that's what I like to do is take advantage of the lesser teams, the Sun Belt and the MAC, those kind of things. But when we do the videos, we're doing the popular games in college football and the NFL. So if you'd like to hear me talk about anything other than the MAC and the smaller teams, that's what you want to do is take a look at these videos. We've had a lot of success on these videos. They're getting a tremendous amount of viewership, and even, you know, other than myself, there's a lot of great handicappers at the site, and we also invite guys from out of town that are on the competing sites. So we'd love to have you on next time you get to Vegas. It'd be great to have your knowledge on the site, and hey, you get a chance to see Adam on his actual look and on video instead of having to listen to the voice. So good schedule of videos today. Can't wait to do them. And I've already put up a bunch of NFL, college football for the weekend. Today's my day to load the plays today and tomorrow, and we're already halfway done. Looks like a real strong card, real good weekend last weekend. Looking to continue it this weekend.
Well, I don't think anybody actually wants to see me on camera. I got one of those faces for radio. But Brian Leonard, professional handicapper at wagertalk.com, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. Appreciate your time as always, Brian. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great, and good luck to everyone this weekend.
Good stuff there, as always, from professional handicapper Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com. We got one more guest here for this 1,000th episode of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. Congratulations to you and everybody at Bang the Book on 1,000 episodes.
Thank you so much, sir. Good to have you as a part of it here, and you know, one of the things I want to touch on, and this has been a very important thing to me over all these episodes that we've done, you know, listeners send in a lot of questions, send in requests for games. I like to make sure that we talk about those on the program. And had a listener question here regarding betting team totals, with the thought process kind of being that, you know, it can simplify the handicap a little bit if you want to focus in on one team, see how they match up, as opposed to looking at both teams for betting the side or the total. So what do you think about team totals, Wes?
Yeah, I think team totals, I mean, are an interesting way to handicap. I mean, I do them sometimes. I mean, I'm not exclusively doing them because, it's a way, I think, to maybe handicap the game, perhaps when the line gets away from you. You know, if you like a spot for a team, but, you know, sometimes the line moves and sometimes it gets away from you, whether it's, you know, on a day where it's like basketball, which is the prices are only out for a day, or whether it's foot prices are out all week and it's like, man, that line just got away from me and it maybe crossed a key number. So I don't necessarily want to chase that number, but it's a way to still get involved on something that might be a good spot to be able to do that. And so I think it's just another thing and another tool that a bettor has in his or her arsenal to be able to make money here. It's obviously another, you know, you look at it both ways. It's another opportunity to make money, but it's also another opportunity to lose. I mean, because, I mean, this is gambling here, and you're obviously taking a risk every time you make a bet. But I think you have to look at it in terms of, you know, just another alternative out there. I mean, there's so many ways to do this. It's not just the traditional 11 to 10 where it's a point spread and a total, like mainly in football and basketball. It's also team totals. It's also teasers. It's also, you know, every type of other exotic can wager. So, I mean, I think it's something to definitely look at, you know, and I mainly use it for like when a line gets away from me or something of that nature.
Well, I mean, the only frame of reference, unfortunately, that we have for today, because team totals aren't out yet for college football or the NFL, is to look at the NHL. And when you look at the NHL here for today, you've got the Flyers and the Senators. Flyers a -128 favorite, total 6.5, slightly juiced to the under. You've got Philadelphia over 3.5 goals, +125, under 3.5 goals, -155. You've got Ottawa over 2.5 goals, -155, under 2.5 goals, +125. That's one of the things that does kind of keep me away from the team totals market a little bit, Wes, is that a lot of times you're paying significant juice. And I think that in Major League Baseball, where I do tend to use it a little bit more because, you know, you're handicapping the starting pitcher anyway. So if you feel like you've got a good advantage there or the bullpen's tired, something like that, you can play some team total overs or unders in Major League Baseball. That's where I like to do it the most. But the one thing that does give me a lot of pause is that you can get some significant juice on these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And baseball, I think, probably is the best because it's such a pitcher-dominant handicap sport. And it's such a statistical sport that you can look at a pitcher in terms of how he does against a lefty heavy batting lineup, or whether it's bullpen, or whether it's, you know, looking at what we saw this year. I mean, we're Kevin Cash and the Tampa Bay Rays kind of changed a lot in terms of how baseball was bet this year. And we talked about this before, and I'll be able interested to see if some columnist or somebody does a little study of this, you know, in terms of, you know, having these starting pitchers that aren't really starting pitchers that are going to give you 1 2/3 and then they're going to go make a change and go to the bullpen. So, I mean, you have a lot of different options. And I think team totals probably fit the best with baseball because you have so many numbers really to go on, whereas other sports you might be looking a little bit at market or any type of indicators that you may see there. Like tonight, we looked at NHL. Golden Knights are actually in a spot I like. I mean, it's the traditional, Stanley Cup rematch, you know, take the team that lost spot with the Golden Knights. there's a couple markets that have seed totals out there. One is if it's high as over 2.5 minus 135, and then like Pinnacle, it's 2.5 minus 123 to the over, and then plus $1.09 on the take back to the under. So, I mean, you know, you look a little bit at market here, and it's just almost really, I think, another way to handicap the game. But in the more statistically dominated sports like baseball and hockey, it's probably a little bit easier to get involved, and there's probably more opportunities, maybe necessarily, than there is to look at, because it's a smaller condensed schedule as well. You know, when you're doing college football, like on a Saturday where there's 100-some games, when you're including the FCS games and the FBS versus FCS. So, I mean, you know, there's so many games to get involved there that it's often tough to use team totals in, like, college football.
Well, and I think when you look specifically at a game like Vegas and Washington here tonight, you know, I'm seeing a bet online over 2.5 minus $1.30 for Vegas in that one. Total of 6, with the under having a little bit of extra juice, over minus 103, under minus 107. You know, Washington just gave up 7 goals to Pittsburgh. So I have to think that, you know, Washington, one of the big questions about them coming into the season was their defense and also their goaltending. Well, they've had 6 days between games here. They've had 5 days off since they played Pittsburgh. Have they fixed some things? You know, maybe. But also, early on in the season, you're trying to get into a rhythm. You're trying to shake off some of that rust. For Braden Holtby, who had a little bit of a tough, you know, for both goaltenders, really, they had a tough go in that game there against Pittsburgh. How much can change over 5 or 6 days? Maybe you like Vegas over 2.5, but also Washington scored 13 goals in 2 games. They're playing a very wide open style of hockey. So do you take Vegas over 2.5 minus $1.30, or do you just take the over 6 minus 103, or do you just, if you think Vegas has offensive success, just take the plus 129? So, you know, that's one of the things about derivative betting, and I know you're a high-volume guy, and you're looking for edges wherever you can find them. I think laying $1.30 on the team total over for Vegas isn't really a great edge tonight when I think the game could probably go over 6 goals anyway, so I'll take the smaller juice there at the minus 103. But again, you've got different options that are out there, and if we look at this from a football standpoint, looking at the Thursday night game between Texas Tech and TCU, team totals aren't out yet, but it's not very hard to figure these things out. Total of 61.5, spread of 7. So you're going to have TCU either 34 or 34.5, Texas Tech either 27 or 27.5, and those are going to be your team totals. So even though they're not out yet, you can still get a feel for what these numbers are going to be and then know if that's something that you want to play when that number pops, because keep in mind, you know, as we've talked about already, the juice can be a little bit prohibitive with these things, so you want to try to get in as quickly as possible when they open.
Sure, absolutely. And interesting you bring up that Texas Tech TCU game. That line, obviously, or that total, rather, has gone down 3 points from what was the pinnacle opener, if you have a line screen, a Don Best or something like that. And it's mainly gone down because you have the TCU quarterback that's questionable, but now he's probable, but he might not start. And then you have Alan Bowman for Texas Tech that's still listed as questionable, that a week ago today was in the hospital with a collapsed lung from a hit he took in the game against West Virginia. So, I mean, you can obviously see why that's gone down. And then, you know, if something happens and some news breaks that these guys are cleared, then it's going to get bet back over more than likely. You're going to see money there. So then it's like kind of a race to kind of beat the number. But the thing is, the regular, like the totals, the game totals, the first half totals and stuff like that are going to move probably, unless it's a really super sharp book that knows what they're doing, are going to move probably more rapidly than a team total is going to.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And again, I mean, this is just another thing in your toolbox. You know, I think a lot of people look at sports betting and say, okay, well, you know, I have to take Texas Tech plus 7 or TCU minus 7 or take the over or the under or put TCU in a money line parlay or whatever it is that people like to do, you have so many other options because of the derivative market, to where if you feel like you find an edge, you know, maybe you don't think there's an edge on the seven, but maybe you think that, you know, TCU with Gary Patterson and extra time to prepare is going to hold Texas Tech down, but you also don't trust TCU's offense. So maybe you take that Texas Tech team total under. This gives you another opportunity, another option. And again, Wes, I mean, you and I have talked about this a lot here before. When you look at how tight the totals market and the sides market is on a game-by-game basis, the future of this business is first half, second half, team total, and live betting or prop betting. A lot of prop betting markets out there that you can look to exploit as well. So those are the things that I think you really find a lot more value on. And we don't talk about them a ton on the show here because maybe some people are still using locals. Maybe some people don't have access to first half, second half, team totals, props, all that stuff, or don't have access to get in on them within the time frame in which they're available. But so many opportunities in those markets.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough to win. And, you know, you'll have people saying how great they're doing, but, you know, kind of go mum when they're not doing as great, because it's tough to win. It's tough to beat the 11-10. I mean, you're not talking about a realistic goal of saying, hey, I'm going to hit 70% on all my bets. I mean, you're wanting to be in the mid-50s, and that makes you very, very good at this. And when you're trying to do that, there's just more different options. I mean, you can look at it the most cynical way and say, hey, this is another way for sportsbooks to get your money for you to lose a bet. But, you know, it's also a way to, get involved. I mean, you're going to have, I think, as sports betting expands, you're going to have some guys that are really going to be specialists, I would say, more in the proper bit or so. I mean, you know, they're probably going to be bettors that maybe aren't, you know, putting their picks or plays available for purchase, but they're going to use this a lot more maybe for their personal betting than they ordinarily would.
That's an excellent point. I mean, you know, I don't want our listeners to think that team totals or props or something like that are like side bets on a blackjack table with a, you know, 15 or 20% house edge. That's not the case. These aren't money grabbing things. These are extra options that are put out there, and they're put out there because of demand. I mean, you know, yeah, it is something where the books maybe do try to take a little bit of money and maybe try to balance their counts a little bit from the side in total, but also people wanted these things and people have success with these things. And yeah, they don't always have the same limits as betting sides or totals, but there are edges to be had out there. And that's the important takeaway, I think, from team totals. And again, I think they can be a little bit difficult to do in higher variance environments, but still, it's one of those things where, you know, if you've got a good read on something, go ahead and try to use it to your advantage. All right, Wes, let's talk a little bit about the NFL card for week 6. And let's take a look at game 269-270, the Rams in Denver. This number, Rams -7, plus money, even money, some -05 out there. So it does look like Denver getting the full touchdown is the preferred side based on the juice that we're seeing. Tough play to make, though, after how Denver looked last week.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it would be my preferred side as well, simply on the situation. I mean, that's a very tough back-to-back for a road team to make, regardless of how the teams are record-wise. That is tough to go to Seattle and then go to Denver the next week. I mean, we've talked about it enough. Seattle and Denver are very high-end home field advantages in this league for all the various reasons that we could talk about. You know, the loud, the noise in the stadium in Seattle, the altitude in Denver, and numerous other reasons. But, you know, we looked at the Rams last week, and you can look at it, I think, both ways, and both ways are right. The first way you could look at it is, yeah, they did give up 31 points, and they're, you know, their defense, as talented as it is and as good of a defensive coordinator as Wade Phillips is, this is a defense that can be had. We saw Minnesota move the ball on them on Thursday night and score in the 30s. We saw Seattle do it last week. So, you know, it's a decent pad, and that's, I think, kind of the thing that maybe are holding some people back from saying, hey, the Rams are the best team in the league, and most people are still probably saying that they're the best team, at least right now today. But, I mean, their defense isn't great, but at the same time, they showed that they were a tough team. They didn't cover, but they got to win it at Seattle, and Seattle really played their butts off. And, you know, it's kind of a thing where they probably deserved a better fate and deserved a better result, where they played well enough to win but just couldn't do it. So, you know, with this side, I do kind of like Denver here. They were in, and I went against them last week with the Jets, I felt one of my better plays because it was just such a bad spot for Denver coming off that near miss on Monday night against Kansas City and then having to go across the country for an early kickoff on Sunday to play a Jets team that had lost a couple in a row and kind of, you know, were desperate for a win. And, you know, the game got away from them and they just could never come back. But, you know, you're looking at Denver right now. 2 weeks ago at home, they got bet down to 3.5 against the Kansas City Chiefs. That was the closing number. I mean, they were 5, 4.5, 4 early in the week, but now you're seeing at some places that they're a touchdown, you know, with heavier juice. But, you know, that's kind of a little bit of a big leap in 2 weeks. And for a Rams team in its second straight consecutive road game. So I could see why Denver's getting a little bit of a sharp action, and I actually, that's the side I would prefer. I haven't bet the game yet, but if I do, it would more than likely be on the Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying makes sense there, and not just the situational element of the Rams playing this tough back-to-back road double, and they did have some extra prep time for that Seahawks game by playing on Thursday night against Minnesota. But this is also a thing here, too, where that was the changing of the guard game for the Rams in the NFC West. I mean, we know that that was already in progress, and obviously the Rams did win that division last year. But this was kind of the final nail for that Seattle team, I think. And Seattle gave it their all, took a lead into the fourth quarter in this game, a touchdown lead, no less, and weren't able to finish it off. And that just kind of, I think, speaks to what we're looking at now in the NFC West. So for the Rams, who probably have an understanding of that as well, and I'm certainly sure that's kind of what the feeling is there for them, now they go to Denver. Now you play against a non-conference opponent. You're traveling out to the thin air after playing, you know, such a tough emotional game last weekend against really Seattle's best effort probably of the season. I think from this point forward, Seattle probably is a long-term fade type of team, both from the injuries and also from what we've seen here with just how far they've fallen off. But this is an even tougher spot for the Rams now because of that. And also, they're on the road again next week, albeit a much shorter trip to take on the 49ers, but right back in the division once again. So this is a divisional sandwich spot for the Rams, travel to a tough locale. And again, you know what that win meant last week. And that's one of the things about the NFL, too. And, I mean, I'm sure I'll have some people that are kind of pissed off at me about this. But, you know, I'm very analytics-driven in Major League Baseball. I understand the place of analytics in the NHL, and I'm trying to get a better grasp of them. You know, in college football, I use power ratings and a lot of those types of things. The NFL is a lot more about the situational handicap, the gray area handicap. And when you look at that for the Rams here this week, I think they're in a very tricky spot.
Yeah, and I love the term that you used, changing of the guard game, because it kind of reminds me of a term that Alan Boston, I've heard him use, and I use it now too as well. And I mean, it mainly pertains to basketball, but you can certainly use it for football. Certainly not a stretch to do so. The show 'em who's boss game. The show 'em who's boss game is like, you know, when you have a team that's established and they get the young upstart who looks like they're really good, and people think it's a changing of the guard game, but it's really not. And then you kind of go through with a division rival, like the show 'em, or a conference rival, the show 'em who's boss game first, before you can get to the changing of the guard game, which is exactly what you had last Sunday with the Rams. I think people now know that the Rams are kind of the kings, even though they haven't been doing it for years. It's not like they're the Patriots where they're winning 14 or whatever AFC East titles in a row, or, you know, I forget the number, but I think people get my drift. You know, the Rams finally, I think, are the power in this division, and Seattle has kind of ceded their seat here at the top of the throne. So that is even a better and great point by you in the fact that now they got to come down from that, where it's like, okay, now we're the kings of this division. So now they have a non-conference game, and going to a team that probably is pretty desperate for a win. I'm not a huge fan of the current coach of Denver, but I do think that team plays really hard, and they played pretty hard every week, even though they got eventually blown out last week. So, you know, that's what you always look for if the underdog is an honest effort, and I think you're going to get one here.
All right, let's talk quickly here about Baltimore and Tennessee. And this was an angle I kind of talked about a little bit with Ralph Michaels on yesterday's show, and he's hoping to have some more data for us next week on this. But one of the things I was kind of wondering with regards to this game, I mean, obviously the market thinks Tennessee is a little bit of a regression candidate. This number has gone from pick to -3 at the Greek, Bovada, MyBookie, Bookmaker, a few places still holding that 2.5 as long as they can, but those seem like they'll be going away shortly. Tennessee plays the London game next week. How much of a look-ahead factor do you think that is for a team to go and do something different, do something unique, take the family over there? How much of a factor do you think that is for the Titans this week?
I think that certainly probably has to play into it. You know, Tennessee obviously saw that every other team in the division lost last week except for Houston, who now looks like they're at least not totally out of it. I mean, that Houston team, you could make an argument, could be 0-5. And they got a fortunate win against Indianapolis in OT. And then the situation showed that they were probably lucky to beat Dallas, but they couldn't pull away. I think a lot of that was kind of them shooting themselves in the foot and Bill O'Brien's play calling. But nonetheless, this division all of a sudden is very clustered with Jacksonville now 3-2, Tennessee 3-2, and Houston at 2-3, Colts 1-4, kind of rebuilding, but maybe still not out of it, although I don't see it. Tennessee's also got some injuries here with Taylor Lewan, their offensive tackle listed as questionable, Wesley Woodyard, Kenny Vaccaro is obviously out. We know Delanie Walker is on injured reserve. So, I mean, you've got a team that I think has some injury issues. Baltimore, of course, got Jimmy Smith last week, which I think was a big help to their defense, even though they ended up losing the game. So, you know, I can kind of see why the bettors are getting out ahead of the market here with Baltimore. We will see how high this line goes before you see a buyback, which I think you'll see on Tennessee once you start to get flat threes out there in the market. But this is a tough call for me. I mean, you know, we'll look at this maybe in the super contest segment. I think this would be a tough one to put on your card because it's like, it's really tough to take Tennessee, who I felt was a regression candidate last week, even though the market didn't. I mean, that got up to 6 against Buffalo, and I ended up taking the Bills because I just thought that line was too high. I didn't know how much I really believed in Tennessee, even off a good win over Philadelphia. And then you look at Baltimore. I mean, the perception of Cleveland, even though they are a better team, is that they're still a little bit Cleveland, if you know what I mean there. I mean that they're not that they're not an elite team, even though they're better. So, I mean, but obviously the market maybe has a higher perception of Cleveland because they're betting Baltimore here. So, I mean, that would be if you, like, you know, said, hey, Wes, you got to make a pick when the opening numbers come out on Sunday night, who do you think is going to win that game? I'd say Baltimore, but this isn't a game right now. I don't think I'm interested in betting, but that could obviously change throughout the weekend because sometimes there's games you don't like during the week that all of a sudden, you know, on Saturday or Sunday on game day where you're like, well, let me take another look at this, and then maybe you saw something that you didn't see before.
I will say this. I mean, it does seem like Tennessee's defense a little bit better than people anticipated here so far this season. Mike Vrabel doing a very good job at that side of the ball. And the Ravens haven't scored a touchdown in 123 game minutes. 123 minutes and 3 seconds, actually. So it's been a long time where they've just had to settle for field goals, where they've turned the football over. They've, you know, given the ball away on third down, some different things like that. So interesting to see Baltimore taking the money here. But again, like you said, I'll be very curious to see where that number actually winds up settling. All right, to wrap things up here for this edition of Bang the Book Radio, I wanted to touch on the CIMB Classic over at TPC Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. You've got Justin Thomas, huge favorite, plus 460. That's about the lowest price you're going to see on a golf betting favorite here probably this season. I mean, we used to see Dustin Johnson in the 550 to 6-1 range, something like that, but rarely have we seen anybody down below 5-1. So, Wes, obviously you're not going to take a shot with Justin Thomas this week. Anybody on your card that you do like here for this weekend?
Yeah, just kind of close the pattern on this. I mean, this was the Ryan Moore Invitational over here when he won back-to-back, and then it turned into the Justin Thomas Classic when he won 2 years back-to-back. So Pat Perez won last year, so maybe we should all make it easy on ourselves and just bet Pat Perez. Assuming that's going to continue that pattern, but I'm not going to do that. And Justin Thomas, you know, is the rightful favorite. He's the only top 10 player ranked in the world in the field this week. But the guy that kind of stood out to me was maybe the fifth, sixth price down the board was Xander Schauffele, who's about 14 or 16 to 1. I think he might have even opened as high as 20 at some places. Schauffele was the guy that I think we thought this was going to be his breakout year after he won the Tour Championship in 2017. And he ended up not getting a win this year. But he had some really – when he was good, but he was inconsistent, missed a few cuts and missed them badly. But, you know, he was right there at the Open Championship in Carnoustie, ended up tied for sixth at the U.S. Open. He was tied for second at the Players Championship. And, I mean, he had some really good finishes, I think. You look after he was not selected for the Ryder Cup team. He tied for third at the BMW, and he tied for seventh at the Tour Championship in East Lake. So that's a pretty good buy sign for me in the fact that this is a guy that obviously responded well when you look at those two finishes to disappointment and not being selected for that team. He was third here last year. And the thing about this, of one caveat I want to mention, this course has changed a little bit. They changed from Papsalam to Bermuda greens to Bermuda all over throughout the course on the fairways and on the tees as well. So that's going to make the greens more deceptive, but it's also going to make them faster greens. And I think that could be pretty good for Schauffele here. One of the things you want to look at too is guys that not only have had success on this course, not just from a course standpoint, but from a weather standpoint. It's going to be pretty humid over there in Kuala Lumpur. So you're going to want to look at the weather, hot, humid over there. So guys that I think can be used to that. He's a West Coast guy. So I think he probably will be used to that and will adjust to that. So Schauffele was a guy I looked at. And then on the other side of the pond, I took another guy that kind of had a disappointing year that you thought this might be a breakout year for him on the European side was Rafa Cabrera-Bello at 30-1. Did not get a win this year, had a couple cracks at it, but wasn't able to get it done. Also had the disappointment of not making the Ryder Cup team. When you looked at it maybe in January of this year in 2018, you thought, that guy's a virtual lock. He's for sure going to be on the team. And he ended up not qualifying on points and not being selected by Captain Bjorn. But, I think some of these guys, you get into some of these events during, I don't want to call it silly season because they are
real events that pay real money and real FedEx Cup points. But you look at these events, and some guys maybe play them for – I mean, you want to win every time you tee it up, but some guys play it just to kind of keep playing and keep their schedule and keep their routine. And some guys use this maybe as, you know, kind of a last chance to put something on the board this year and then look forward to next year. So, you know, that's why I like Schauffele and Cabrera Bayo were kind of the shorter price guys I play. And then I looked at a couple guys in the 66 range. I looked at Sam Ryder, who I took, who finished tied for fourth at the Safeway last week and then actually got into this field when Johnny Vegas withdrew. So the fact that he's willing to take a 24-hour flight over here off a good finish, you know, could be kind of a buy sign for him.
Yeah, one guy I mentioned on yesterday's show, Cameron Smith, he was about 35 or 33 to 1, I think. He's actually down to 25 to 1 now. So some people kind of tipping him a little bit this week. But you know, this is an important series of events here. The next three events over on the Asian swing, CJ Cup next week at Nine Bridges. Then you've got the first WGC event. If Schauffele doesn't get this one but plays pretty well, he's almost an automatic play in that WGC event because that's a guy – you mentioned the good finishes he had last year. He really steps it up when the fields are the strongest. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he just needs that challenge or something like that, but that's a guy that plays extremely well when the lights are the brightest. So if Schauffele doesn't get this one, you probably get him 28, 30 to 1 with a stronger field for the WGC. Maybe a little bit optimistic on the price there. But Schauffele is a guy that, you know, if he doesn't get this one or doesn't get next week's, I think WGC is a good spot to play on him as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you can't be afraid, and this was a lesson that I kind of learned last week. You can't be afraid to play guys that maybe let you down, and this is a lesson you can learn in handicapping. It's like just because a team burns you one week doesn't mean you don't play them necessarily the next week. And the lesson I learned here was actually with Lucas Bjerregaard, who's a guy I played a little bit on the features board a few times over on the European Tour, and he's had some good efforts, good top fives, but maybe just fall short. Of course, I don't use him last week at the Dunhill Links, and what does he do? He wins, and wins by a shot over two guys that were coming off the Ryder Cup high, and Tyrrell Hatton, who was the 54-hole leader, and Tommy Fleetwood. So, you know, he beat some pretty good guys to win that championship, and then, you know, I left him off. So, you know, Just because somebody burns you, like you were saying, you know, maybe Xander doesn't get it done this week, but he's a guy you certainly want to look at for that WGC event in China, or even maybe next week in Nine Bridges, even though he didn't really play well there last year. But, you know, don't just abandon a guy just because he doesn't get home for you the first time you include him on your card.
Wes Reynolds, who's working, you can follow on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Appreciate your time on today's show, Wes. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Hey, thanks for having me, and congratulations to you and everyone again on 1,000 episodes.
Thank you so much. That's Wes Reynolds again at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. 1,000 episodes. Kind of crazy to think that we've gotten to that point here, and it's been a lot of hard work. It's been a lot of hours put into it, but certainly, you know, I wouldn't change it for anything. And again, very happy to celebrate that with a couple of solid guests here on today's show. A couple of things I want to mention right here before we finish things up for today. Obviously, sending our best wishes to everybody in the path of Hurricane Michael, the panhandle of Florida going up on through Georgia, on into the Carolinas as well, where they're expected to get rain and even more rain and some additional wind here. So certainly our best wishes going out to those people that have yet another hurricane to deal with here. Again, a very active tropical season this year. Also saw on Twitter today that it's hashtag World Mental Health Day. Again, I've talked about this before on the show here, and I'm certainly open with talking about it because I think it's very, very important that, you know, there is no shame in asking for help. There should be no stigma in asking for help. So if you need it, if you think you need it, go out there and get it. Whether you talk to a family member or a friend or a trained professional, don't hold that stuff in. Don't let it fester. Don't let it get worse. Be proactive about it instead of reactive, because if you're reactive about it, it may end up being too late. So definitely, if you feel like you've got you know, any mental health issue that, you know, you want someone to address for you. You want to get the skills to be able to, you know, mitigate some of those symptoms, or, you know, just learn how to live with them in a more healthy way. Make sure that you go out there and get that assistance that you need. It's something that I did a few years ago. It's something that has changed my life and helped me out dramatically. And you know what? It's one of those things where I knew there was a problem. I waited for a long time. It came to a boiling point to where I realized, you know what? I have to try and turn this negative situation into some kind of positive, get some silver linings out of it. And it's been very beneficial for me. So if you are somebody out there dealing with some sort of mental health issue, please, 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 I implore you to, you know, get some help for it. Again, if you don't trust a trained professional, if you want to talk to a friend or a family member, you can certainly do that. But I would certainly recommend going the professional route, because those are people that don't know you, don't have any preconceived notions about you. And it's a lot easier to open up to somebody that is in that type of position, that is, you know, classically trained to help you with some of those things. So again, here on World Mental Health Day, if you've got any of those things going on in your life, please make sure that you address them. And then finally, coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com will join me. We'll chat college football with him. Then Tony George from Doc Sports will do his NBA prep. We'll get an update on that, see how that's going. Talk a little bit of NFL and a little bit of college football as well. And then also on tomorrow's show, at the tail end of the program, I will give an update on the Major League Baseball playoffs, my thoughts for the NLCS between the Dodgers and the Brewers, the ALCS between the Red Sox and the Astros. So if you've got futures questions, get those to me, adam@bangthebook.com or at Skating Tripods on Twitter. I'll be happy to answer those for you, whether I do it off the air or on the air with tomorrow's show. Then, of course, Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment, and also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Here's to 1,000 more, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.